Cassie dropped lightly to the ground, and the other fellow slammed and locked the door, leaving me in darkness, my heart hammering. But I could hear their voices plain enough. "Now then, Cass," says Little. "You just shuck down, do you hear?" There was a pause, and then Cassie's new voice. "Massa Gwinter be nice to Cassie. Cassie a good girl. Please, massa, ever so much." "By God, and so you will. Look at that, George. Here, you make yourself scarce. By gosh, I'm going to tend to this little beauty right here and now. What are you waiting for, George? You get out of here."
"Don't I get none of her, then?"
"You'll get your piece when I'm done. Now get out of here, quick." I heard George's reluctant footsteps retreating, and then silence. A minute passed. Then there was a sudden, sharp gasp and a thin whining sound, halfway between a sigh and a wail, and it made the hairs rise on my neck. A moment later came Cassie's voice in sudden alarm.
"Master George! Master George, come quick! Something happened to Master Tom! He hurt himself! Come quick!"
"What's that?" I heard George's feet running. "You all right, Tom? What?" The gunshot crashed out with startling suddenness. There was a scream and a choking groan, then nothing, until I heard the padlock rattle. The door was flung back, and there was Cassie. Even in the dusk, I could see she was naked. She still had the musket in her hand.
"Quickly," she cried. "Come out. They're both done for."
I was out in a twinkling. George lay spread-eagled at my feet, the top half of his face a bloody mash. Little was crouched on his knees by the campfire, his head down. Even as I started towards him, he rolled over with a little bubbling sob, and I saw the knife hilt sticking out of the crimson-soaking mess that stained his shirt. He twitched for a moment, then was still. Cassie was at the wagon, holding weakly to the door, her head hanging. I hopped over to her, grabbed her round the waist, and swung her off her feet.
"Oh, you wonderful nigger," I shouted. "You little black beauty, you bravo! Two at one stroke, my daughter. Well done indeed." And I kissed her gleefully.
"Set me down," she gasped. "In God's name, set me down."
So I put her down, and she shuddered and sank to the ground, all of a heap. For a moment, I thought she'd fainted. But she was a prime girl, that one. With her teeth chattering, she grabbed up her dress, pulling it down over her head, which seemed a pity, for she cut a truly splendid figure in the firelight. I patted her on the shoulder, telling her what a brave wench she was.
"Oh, God," says she, with her eyes tight shut. "Oh, horrible. I didn't know what it was like when I drew the knife from his belt and..."
She put her face in her hands and sobbed. "Serve him right," says I. "You're a damned good plucked un, young Cassie." But she sat there, shivering. So I searched Tom's pockets for the keys to our fetters, and soon had us both loose. Then I went through their pockets. But apart from $15, there was nothing except their guns, one musket, two pistols, and all the time my heart was singing. I was free again, thanks to that splendid nigger wench. By gum, I admired that girl, and still do. And while I heated up some coffee and victuals, I told her what I thought of her. She seemed to shake herself out of her trance, for she threw back that lovely Egyptian head and looked at me. "You remember your promise?" she says, and I assured her I did. I can see her now, those wonderful almond eyes watching me while I prattled on, praising her resource and courage, and before the meal was done, she was telling me what we must do next. My admiration increased. Why? She had thought it all out beforehand, in the wagon. It had been my remark about slave catchers not touching a white man that had shown her how she could make a successful run this time. "We must travel as master and slave," says she. "That way, no one will give us a second thought. But we must go quickly."
"In that," says I, nodding to the cart, and she shook her head.
"It can take us no farther than the river. We must go faster than it will carry us. We must go by steamboat."
"Hold on, though, that costs money, and these two hadn't but $15 between them."
"Then we'll steal money," says she fiercely. "We have pistols. You are a strong man. We can take what we need."
But I wasn't having that. It was too risky by half, and so I told her. Holding someone up will only increase the danger, says I. But then we would be hunted, whereas if we go our way quietly, there'll be no hue and cry until these are found.
Whoever we rob could go the way these went, says she. Then there would be no added danger.
God, she was a cold-blooded one, that.
Why should we be squeamish over white lives? Do you think I care if every one of these filthy slave-driving swine is torn to pieces tomorrow? And why should you shrink from it after what they would have done to you? Are they your people, these?